Hey, welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I'm gonna have a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. Welcome in as we talk through every single Big Ten basketball team each and every episode. There is no team left out as the Big Ten Huddle discusses each and every one of them. I got my guy Burke with me today from the often daunted Indiana Basketball Podcast, and we have some Indiana to discuss tonight, Burke.
That we do, that we do. But hey, shout out to the Big Ten as a whole, man. Like that, we're coming out of the gate firing. And as far as these, like everyone's talking about the Big East, everyone's talking about the SEC. Guess what? Opening night, like they had a rough first week, and the Big Ten's just shown out. I'm proud of every single one of you watching for doing your
There
part.
we go. There we go. Yeah, the Big Ten has had some good wins. Ohio State beat Texas. That was a good one. Actually, Yale was a better win than I think some people kind of give them credit for Purdue. That's a tough team, and that's a team that has been pretty good tournament team here the past few years. And so it's a
And
good team
we'll
and a
really
team
get
that
to
you definitely.
see we'll really get to see what that win is when they take on Minnesota just this weekend. So, I mean, it's just an awesome weekend for Big Ten hoops, and I'm glad to be here to talk about it.
We got a lot of games to discuss. So we can't discuss all of them, unfortunately. So the way this is going to work is Burke and I are going to be discussing five games tonight. Those five games in order are South Carolina, Indiana. Oh, I have a wrong order on my thing. Ohio State, A&M, Marquette, Maryland, Arizona, Wisconsin, and then Purdue and Alabama. We will be discussing those five games. And then at the end, we're going to just kind of do some like general discussion about what's going on in the Big Ten. How have teams played? What do we expect from teams here in the future? And that's really the aspect of the show where if you're watching live, you can kind of interact with us in the chat. Let us know what you think. If you have a team you want us to discuss, that kind of stuff. And we'll just kind of go from there. As always, super chat function is open if you would like to utilize it. If you don't, that's cool too. We go through the chat and try to hear what you all say. But let's check in with the chat right before we get going. All right. We got John here. He says, two more days until round three of the Indiana recruiting disappointment trail with Bryson Tiller probably going to Auburn or Kansas. Is that your same thought there, Burke?
My thought is just, hey, who cares, man? Bryson Tucker just showed up on our lap like August before we took to the court, and that kid is just going to be, he was found money for us. So I think there's a new way to recruit in today's day and age. I shouldn't say recruit, a new way to build a competitive team. And we're just going to go that route, man. No, there's no reason to cry over a 17-year-old deciding to go to school somewhere else. There just isn't right now. Not when you have like 25-year-old point guards available.
No, it's true. I do think, you still need to have good recruiting, but I don't really worry about recruiting too much right now. There's so many players that flip. There's so many things that happen during the season and in the off season. I don't even worry about it that much. So,
And as far
John,
as
I'm not.
finding, yeah, as far as finding those program guys, like Miles Rice can still be that. These guys who we get on their sophomore year after they've proven that they are the real deal, like they can still become program guys because we have Miles Rice for another 3.
I was just going to say, John, I understand your frustration and being upset, but don't worry, you got Bryson Tucker on the bench, and Woody has shown that he knows how to go get guys from the portal. So no worries, no worries. John says, I won't be disappointed, but I know Twitter is going to blow up how Winston can't recruit and should be fired. Well, you got a
Yep.
point there, John.
Yeah, I mean
We can't deny the fans and what they'll do.
and then we're all going to yell about there's something needs done, there needs a change in recruiting, and then everyone's going to get mad when our recruiting director's fired. So I don't get any of it, but hey, that's it's just the passion, man. I can't knock the passion.
True. Philip says the new Pac-12 teams really haven't had that great of a start. It's true. We had UCLA fall. Who did they lose to? I'm forgetting now off the top of my head. I'm looking. Oh, New Mexico. New Mexico is a, like that's a Mountain West team, and Mountain West teams have been, pretty good. That's been a better conference. But yeah, they shouldn't be losing to New Mexico. Oregon was down at halftime to, oh, what team is that? I watch so much basketball, it all gets
Portland,
jumbled up in my
and
head.
they took it to
Portland.
overtime to decide it, man. Like that's nasty business.
Washington only beat a Division II team by like 15.
Oh my God. Yeah. Hey, while we're on it, let's just talk about him. Like great Osborne, man.
Okay.
That's
What's your thoughts, Burke?
What are my
Give
thoughts
us your
is great
unfiltered thoughts.
Basically playing like below average Osabor. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, man. Like I did
change the name. Below average Osabor is here.
Come on here, talk about turnover rates, talk about, you know, fast break points. I did some of the calculations that really matter. And I wanted to say right now with his 12 points, let me see, with his 12.0 points per game average, Washington is currently paying $166,666 for every point per game that great Osabor is banking them. That's a sorrowful investment, if you ask me.
That's quite the nickname John gave there. Great Shaq at the free throw line, Osabor. That's the hard part.
He is shooting
with nicknames,
51%
though.
At the free throw line, man.
That's a hard part for nicknames for great, though, because his first name is great. Like, you can make his nickname, like, you know, bad guy, but then his nickname is great bad guy Osabor. It's like,
yeah, you don't really come out in
great,
the middle.
The great,
you know, you don't really come out as the common man if your name's great Osabor. You either come out on top or the bottom. I mean, it's crazy.
There you go. And look at this. You got some love for a Purdue fan here. He says, Burke, bring in the numbers that matter. We all know. Stat Tank Frank loves his numbers.
Oh, God. So, I can't have him checking them, man. He's a wizard with them.
Even the Big Ten huddle can bring Purdue and Indiana fans together. So how about that? Dave checking in. He says, don't have to talk Minnesota. I don't want to hear it. It's going to be a down year for the Gophers. Ben will be fired. Wow. Okay. So I remember when we did our season preview, Burke, you were in that one, right? That was me, you, Dylan, and Russ. I predicted that Ben Johnson would be the first Big Ten coach fired. And I'm feeling kind of good about that prediction. I don't want to feel good about it. I want Ben Johnson to win. I like Ben Johnson. I like Minnesota, but I don't know if he's put together the roster for it this year. He's got Dawson, he's got Mike Mitchell, but if Frank Mitchell is hurt, I mean, that's just one less player that I feel like they don't have on their team, you know?
I feel like if they really wanted to make a move worth a darn, like, they would start investing the money now for the eventual firing, because who's going to want to take that job? Like, with who they have to compete against, with the resources they have to compete against, who wants to take that job? Like, so you almost have to find your most well-equipped alumni, because that's just the corner that they're in.
I do think any Big Ten job has cachet, right? Because of the money and what you can make and stuff like that. Any Big Ten job has cachet, but if there are Big Ten programs that seem to lose talent more often than others, it has been kind of Minnesota, right? Like, it was the double barrel last year where, like, you had players play well and then they either transferred or they went to the NBA. It's like, what do you do, right? Like, I don't know. I kind of feel for Minnesota fans, and I feel for Ben Johnson, because it is a really stuck place to be in. Dave is saying, really would like to hire the coach from Colorado State to come. He's a former Golden Gopher coach. Okay. All right. Didn't realize that. That's a good thought there.
I mean, does Colorado State's been playing well. That guy has options, man. If somebody else fires a coach, like, the resources behind the, but the resources behind all that go into it. The barn needs updated. I feel for the Minnesota fans. They deserve better.
I've not been to a barn game, but, I like watching the barn games.
It's cool.
There's something about the risk of falling off the raised floor that, I don't know, it just,
you can,
me. I don't want to see
can,
it happen.
You can renovate
like,
and
happen,
keep,
you know,
you can renovate and keep quirky charms. You can.
That's true. I love that part of that arena. All right, Burke, let's talk some basketball. All right. We got Indiana, South Carolina. Now, South Carolina is coming to Assembly Hall. South Carolina is 2-1. They lost their very first game to – who did they lose their first game? Was it North Florida?
Yes.
I believe. Yes. They lost their first game of the year to North Florida. Indiana has won both of their games. They blew both teams out, but I think Indiana fans would be lying if they said they didn't have something they were concerned about with the team. Obviously, McKenzie Mbako is having a great year so far, leading the team in points and rebounds. Trey Galloway, coming off the bench, is leading the team in assists, 8.5 assists per game. That is pretty incredible. I think
off the
first
the
game
bench,
he had, what,
man.
Like 14? Right. He had, like, what, 14 game, like 14 points or something, or assists in the first game? How much was it?
9 assists in the first, 8 in the second.
Yeah, 8 in the second. So, yeah, right there at 8.5. So, he's only playing – he's playing less than 20 minutes per game. We'll see if that rotation changes playing against a better opponent. But I'm going to get your thoughts first on it, Burke. What do you think about this game? How do you think the two teams match up? What do you think?
Well, Indiana, that last game, you saw the ceiling and the floor on full display within 40 minutes. Like, that, it was the lackluster effort that just led to errant rebounding. It's just the lack of, just intention behind the rebounding. But you spoke to Trey Galloway. Like, he has been a shining spot coming off that bench. And just what he does, I think that his assists almost speak to what is also happening with McKenzie's game, where McKenzie is lurking when he's in that starting rotation. That starting rotation, that's his time to lurk. Whenever Kanaan and Miles both take to the bench, like he flips a switch and he goes into hunt mode, switches from lurk to hunt, and he goes out and get his. And I think that Trey's numbers can honestly speak to that. I bet he's setting up McKenzie a lot of those when those guys are off the floor. As far as just Umar Ballo down low, through four, because I'm counting the exhibitions, it seems like Mike Woodson has been just pushing him to see how far he can push him when we really need to see how, like, what we can get out of him. I hope that that's been the case, because with how he's been playing these first two, I mean, I wanted this guy because of how tough he is, just the violence he brings to the floor when he's on it. And with that, like, maybe a lot more Ballo in a lot less minutes would do the Hoosiers good than, like, a lot less Ballo in a lot more minutes, if that makes sense. I just feel like if we were able to somehow limit that down, you got so many options in the front court to slide down Malik, slide down McKenzie to take that spot. I mean, Bryson Tucker could play the four if we were really pressed for it. Like, we have so many options there. You just want to see, like, what is the game plan with Ballo moving forward? How's that all going to work out? But as far as Indiana,
I want to touch on that really fast. Just really fast, the minutes thing. This was my number one thing I wanted to ask you about, Burke. What in the world is going on with Umar Ballo, McKenzie Mbako, and Malik Renew leading this team in minutes? Like, I get McKenzie Mbako. I got no problem with McKenzie Mbako out there as much as possible. Dude is a freak. The dude is awesome. But Umar Ballo has not been producing the way that you thought he would this season, only averaging 1.5 offensive rebounds in the two games, which to me, I mean, he should be doing better than that, and then only 6 rebounds in the first two games. I mean, to me, like, you should be getting more production from him, especially in the rebounding game. And you have guys like Rice and Carlisle and Galloway that, I mean, Rice is playing over 50 minutes, but Carlisle has only played 49, and Trey Galloway has only played 35. Bryson Tucker has played more minutes than Trey Galloway has. Like, so I don't get what Mike Woodson is doing here. Obviously, this is a little impactful because they rest guys at the end of games and stuff like that, but, like, Your center and your two forwards should not be playing the most minutes, even if you're resting guys and stuff like that. They should not be playing the most minutes on your team. It just shouldn't be happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. You would think that would be the guys that would be the most easily just exhausted from that. But
right.
Again,
we know
I really...
that about Ballo, right? Like, when Ballo came in, we knew he was not a, you know, 30 minute a game type guy, right?
Yeah. It seems like it is him pushing them. Like, he's seeing what mileage he can get out of these guys in 40 minutes. I really hope that that's the case, because I feel like you got to get Langdon Hatton involved. Just, we brought him in as that, you know, subsidizer, able to get Ballo the wind he needs to get back out there and, you know, just be more efficient, be more determined on the defensive end, all of it.
Goody's gonna shoot less than 30%. Like, if Goody's gonna shoot less than 30%, you gotta get another 3-point shooting.
Yeah,
That'll correct itself.
So we just want Luke Goody to still take all those. Which, speaking of, I do want to speak of Indiana's 3-point so far. Yeah, we're going into Indiana because I'm the guest, so we won't probably spend too much on this the other ones. But their 3-point percentage, like, the efficiency itself has gone up. Everyone's still complaining about the volume, but I genuinely feel like this efficiency going up, it'll just snowball into that volume going up as well. That confidence will it'll translate into volume. As far as Kenan Carlisle, we finally saw him drop two shots in that last game from beyond the arc. With him, it is he is taking some time to find his role in this offense. But the energy that that dude has brought on the defensive end tells me that that's not going to be a problem. Like, he isn't going to be down on himself for missing a few shots. He's bringing such a consistent energy on the floor whenever he is, even though he isn't converting. It'll come. It's inevitable with him. And as far as what Indiana's getting in the South Carolina team, as far as I know, like, they are just big, long, and strong. That Colin Murray Boyles guy down low, and Jacoby Wright, both of those guys taking sophomore leaps. I think Murray Boyles, it's like incredible what he's averaging right now, averaging 21 points per game and 10.7 rebounds. He is going to be a problem if they just look as lax as they did, especially in that first half against Eastern Illinois. Again, I said we saw the ceiling and the floor. I hope to God that was the floor, because it was a pathetic showing in that first half. Whatever Mike Woodson said to them at the half, say it from the tip. I don't know. It's so alarming that it seems like such a, you know, consistent issue that we can't have this from the jump. Maybe it's a problem that all teams face, but it just seems very frequent for a certain Cream and Crimson fan base. But yeah, that's pretty much all my thoughts.
Yeah, I think the Colin Murray's Boyle matchup with Umar Ballo is going to be really interesting in this one. I think, and Philip put it out there, he says, I think you need to platoon Ballo and renew. I think definitely in this one, I mean, Boyle has played 93 minutes so far this season. Now, they've played three games, but those are three games you should have won pretty handily. There's no reason that he should be playing over 90 minutes so far this season. But, of course, like we said, they did lose to North Florida, who I think it was John pointed out, like, they're not a bad team. Like, they have won some games. So, you know, I mean, still and a team that South Carolina should beat. But still, go ahead.
They were, like, after that North Florida loss, they just plummeted in the Torvik. But following the Towson win, like, they did some auto correction there. Like, I think they like doubled the Vegas line. Like, that kind of stuff will correct your numbers. Right now they're sitting at Torvik 50. This is going to be a good win if we get it. Like, and it is a win that if Indiana gets this one now, by the end of the year, it could look a lot better.
Yeah, this will be quad two. That's right. I'm not in basketball terms yet, so I can't remember all the terms. But yeah, no, this will be a quad two win. Most likely could dip into a quad three win, but I anticipate it'll probably stay a quad two win if Indiana gets it. I think Nick Pringle is that other five that can do a lot of damage, but I think at the end of the day, Colin Murray Boyle is really the one you need to look out for more. I think at the end of the day, you just need to be getting Umar Ballo and Malik Renew in there as much as possible, and you need to make sure that those two guys are not fouling out in this game. You don't want to be putting Mbako in a situation where he's going to have to go out after some of these guys, and you definitely don't want Langdon Hatton to be guarding these guys down low. You want your two best guys, and so you can't be getting either of them in foul trouble. On the other side of that, you have got to get the ball to Malik Renew as much as possible down in the post. I know that we've talked a lot about how Indiana needs to shoot and stuff like that, but I really do feel like this is a kind of game where if you get the ball down to Malik Renew in the post and he's passing out of it, ball movement is something that South Carolina has struggled with so far this year. And if you can get the ball moving around, you're eventually going to get a guy open. And Indiana has the shooters this year. I mean, they have Carlisle, they have Goody. Mackenzie Mbako has been shooting over 60% from three so far this year. So you have the rotation of guys that eventually somebody gets it and just let them fire it away, right? I mean, this isn't a team where you have only one guy who can shoot. Whether it's Galloway, Mbako, Carlisle, whoever it is, get those guys out there and let them shoot.
Yeah, and that is a matter of, like, the way we've been working through the post, there's so many times that the Indiana offense just stops moving. Like, the off-ball movement comes to a screeching halt because four guys are going to decide whether they're going to watch Malik, you know, hook it over his shoulder, or if they're going to see Umar Ballo try to, you know, muscle it through up and under. Like, it's the ISO ball just has to stop, because that is what we saw a lot in that first half. Like, just that over the, you know, the pass that Indiana loves doing, just right over the top. Yep. It's nonsense. It's lazy. And then when we do that, like, the other four guys just stand and watch that play happen. And it's like, if we are going to get the most out of Luke Good, out of McKenzie and Bacco, we need movement on the outside to get open shooters to take advantage of that. And yeah, luckily we saw a lot more of that in the second half, and I'm hoping we see a lot of it here.
I think it's just going to continue as the year goes on. I'm confident that Mike Woodson has seen the issues that everybody else has seen. You know, he's not completely anti-three ball. And I think that he's seen the issues and he's willing to correct them. I think last year he was a bit of a hard place because he didn't exactly know who he could go to. But like I said, Carlisle, yeah. Goody, with the way Trey Galloway, McKenzie and Bacco have been shooting, like, you have shooters out there. Let them shoot. So,
yeah, it's really easy to decide not to shoot the three when you ain't got any 3-point shooters. But
right. When Gabe Cupps is out there, it's like, oh, yeah, we probably should let him shoot. Sorry, Gabe Cupps. You get a lot of strays from me. But
hey, you know, sophomore leap. It's coming inbound.
Yeah, I am curious to see how many minutes Gabe Cupps gets in this game. So, I mean, great defender. Don't get me wrong. Like, very good defender. He just, yeah. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking before I insult Gabe Cupps anymore. Okay. Score prediction in this one. Burke, what's your score prediction?
I want the Hoosiers to get out in transition. I want this to be a high scoring game because I feel like if it's going to be a low scoring game, that would play into South Carolina's hands. So I'm going to say Indiana takes this one 84-73.
84-73.
I feel good about it.
All right. I think that South Carolina is going to be able to slow the pace down a little bit. They're not exactly a slow team in college basketball, but they're not a super fast team either. So I think they are going to slow it down a little bit. I think that they're going to try to limit turnovers as much as they can. I think Indiana's going to try to – yeah, I mean, they're just going to try to run as much as they possibly can. They're not one of the fastest teams, but this is definitely a team that can thrive in transition, especially when you have some of the taller guys like Carlisle and Bacco and stuff like that running out there. So and Rice, I think both those guys are over 6'3" or 6'3" or more. So I'm going to go with 75-67 in this game. I think Indiana wins, and I think that it's a pretty close game for the most part, but I think eventually Indiana pulls ahead and they just kind of get ahead and South Carolina isn't able to do anything. So sorry about you in South Carolina, but Michi Johnson ain't coming back through that door.
I like it.
There we go. And look at that. Everybody else is picking Indiana. It's even an Illinois fan in Phillip.
There we go.
65-61 and John 72-63.
Okay, we got to stick together when we can in the Big Ten. Like the SEC and Big East is getting out of control.
Listen, I'm doing it on Twitter right now. All these SEC fans are coming after my Hoosiers on Twitter. Listen, all-time record versus the SEC?
Oh, yeah, dude. I saw that. 34-29. Good pull. Man, you are a lieutenant in this crusade. I love it.
Listen, SEC bias is crazy on Twitter right
now.
It's
insane.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Phillip, South Carolina's terrible. Sometimes I try to, you know, beef a team up a little bit to give them some credit, but I don't know if there's much beefing up I can do for South Carolina. All right, let's talk about this Ohio State and Texas A&M game. This is at Texas A&M. I think the only game we're going to talk about that it is at the other team's arena. So Ohio State had it at home last year. This is a really cool home and home they started doing, and Texas A&M stole that one. I think Ohio State has a pretty good chance of stealing this one out of Texas A&M this year. Ohio State got the big win against Texas, and that really helped them beat Youngstown State. What was it, earlier this week? I think it was Monday night. And Texas A&M, they do have two wins, but they did lose to UCF as well, 64-61. That is not a game that Texas A&M should have lost. I know UCF is a Big 12 team, and people will point to that, but UCF is not a top-tier Big 12 team. It should not count as like, oh, yeah, we just lost to a good Big 12 team. Sorry, they're not. So Texas A&M does have a good percentage here to win the game. Many people are going to pick them. Texas A&M on ESPN has a 63% chance of winning the game. I just don't know what they're seeing. What do you think, Burke? Am I crazy, or I think
OSU wins. How do you lose to UCF and then the computers say you're still number 18 in the country? Like, I don't get any of these computers.
SEC,
I'm thinking maybe because, as we all know, maybe the computers are ran by sellout dorks who don't know nothing about nothing. But yeah, I don't possible. Understand how Texas and how that loss didn't just crater them. Like, as far as the game goes, man, Jake Diebler, like, he is doing something. I do on my show the Flaunted and the Daunted for the week. That's my winners and losers. Jake Diebler's on that list, nice. Man. He they cruised to that win against Youngstown State, 81-46, and that was as 19-point favorites in that game. Again, we're talking. I'm so obsessed with. I hate the numbers. But I'm obsessed with them because they're what kept us out last year. So, like, as 19-point favorites, winning that game 81-46, that is absolutely shredding expectations. That is how you leap, like, dozens of teams at a time. And, I mean, he's just blown me away with how I was high on them in the preseason. I think I ranked them higher than most of the other people on the show.
I think you had them as your surprise team.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, yeah.
Largely you had because of Aaron Bradshaw. I had him as my disappointed. Yeah, I had him as my disappointment.
Oh, look at this. What a world.
No. I just did a video with the OHIO podcast talking about this team, and I won't go as in-depth in this one because it's not an Ohio State show, but I feel like Ohio State is looking better than I thought they would confidence-wise, right? Not that I thought that Jake Diebler wouldn't get this team confident, but I thought this was a team that had a lot of new pieces to it and they were going to try to figure out how to work. But now, I will give credit. Texas A&M Texas was missing Marks, one of their star players on the team, so that's going to be a big thing there. But this is a team in Ohio State that's playing with a lot of confidence right now. Now, the defense isn't exactly there. The defense needs to be better for Ohio State if they want to contend. I know they held Youngstown to like less than 60 or whatever, but it's Youngstown, okay? Texas scored well. Really, their only scorer was Trey Johnson, but they were able to score well. This is going to be a classic battle of Ohio State, really good offense, versus Texas A&M, good defense, and Ohio State, suspect defense, and Texas A&M, suspect offense. Now, I think some of those numbers get a little iffy because Texas A&M does play at a slower pace. I think they're probably one of the slower teams, at least in the Power 5, Power 4, whatever power it is nowadays, not mid-major or small teams. So they are a little bit of a slower team. So their numbers do reflect that a little bit, but they are pretty efficient in what they do as well. Wade Taylor, Philip just mentioned, he's a really, really good player. He hurt Ohio State pretty well last year. I do think that Micah Parrish and Bruce Thornton are a good defensive duo that's going to do a good job of stopping him, but there's only so much stopping you can do with Wade Taylor. You're not going to completely, you know, keep him from scoring in this game, and you're not going to score him from making plays for his teammates as well. He's the leading scorer on this team. He's going to get his. It's just about how much can you limit him getting his.
But what the front court has the opportunity to do is make sure, yeah, they limit that by rebounding, man. If this is going to be a chance for Bradshaw and Stewart to show, like, hey, you're going to be fine there in the Big Ten. Like, the rebounding has been lackluster for Ohio State, I think, right?
They're getting contributions from everybody. The guards are doing a really good job rebounding. They were a little bit swayed because Bradshaw and Sean Stewart did get in foul trouble really early against Texas. So I think Bradshaw, what's he averaging, 3.5 or no? That's defensive rebounds. What is it? 5 rebounds per game. And then Sean Stewart is averaging 5.5. So, you know, it's not great numbers, but a lot of that came from them not playing very much against Texas because they got in foul trouble early.
No, this is going to be their opportunity to really show that they've got some metal. They've got some, you know, strength, some gumption to take this season on and shatter the expectations, which, again, I cannot give Diebler enough credit for pretty much out kicking expectations compared to the rest of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a huge game for Ohio State to kind of like continue that statement, right? They were getting a lot of love after the Texas game, but they are going to have to continue to shoot the three well. Ohio State does not do a great job on the fast break. I think they only have 2 fast break points so far this season, and they don't do a great job of not turning the ball over. They have a very high turnover percentage rate. I think it's nearly 20%, which is one of the worst in the nation. So they are going to have to be able to take care of that. It's actually not been Bruce Thornton this year. Bruce Thornton's done a good job of taking care of the ball. It's really been more Michi Johnson. And they've given Michi Johnson the ball more than I thought they would so far this year. I think in this one, you're going to see a whole lot, a whole lot less of Meechie Johnson on the ball. I think you're going to see Bruce Thornton with the ball a lot more, and I think you're probably going to see Quez Glover with the ball when Bruce Thornton is out in this one. I think that they see that Meechie Johnson is a playmaker, but him running the offense with the ball, I don't think it's the answer. At least so far it hasn't been. I think maybe later on in the season as things get better, but you can't trust Meechie Johnson to be the primary ball handler on this team. And Micah Parrish, kind of the same way. He's not really been the primary ball handler that Meechie Johnson has been, but he can't be your guy who is, you know, handling the ball most just with the way he turns the ball over and stuff.
So in this game, do you think we see that John Mobley Jr. is in fact like a mortal human?
We'll see. What's he shooting 3-point wise on the year?
87.5. Absolutely absurd. Stupid.
Yeah, numbers. I wrote an article on him the other day for ScotlandGame.com, which if you ever want Ohio State content, go over to Scotland and Game. I write there. And yeah, he is killing it right now, shooting the ball. And he's basically got the quick trigger. I mean,
good teams have that. Good teams have somebody who has to be highlighted off the bench. Like that's right. He is such a huge piece for Ohio State's fortune moving forward. And yeah, incredible to see that. Of course, it is a sample size of 8, but we'll see how it goes in this one. So,
yeah, that's probably like my second biggest thing to look at, other than the Bruce Thornton and Wade Taylor matchup and how those two play each other. I think that's probably my second biggest thing to look at here for Ohio State. On the road, can Junie Mobley Jr. come off the bench and still be a threat shooting the ball like he has been, you know, so far this season? It's not just been shooting either. He's been playmaking. He's been getting assists as well. He has 1.5 assists per game on the season. I think he had 3 against Texas, and he didn't have as many against Youngstown State, but in that game, he was just kind of shot hunting, which, you know, you're playing a bad team and you want to get your numbers up. I get it. But he definitely has the ability to pass as well. So, all right, Burke, let's get score predictions for this one. Who do you think is going to win? What do you think the score is going to be? Ohio State at Texas A&M.
I'm going to say Ohio State gets the win. That's going to be Ohio State 72, Texas A&M 69. We're keeping it close.
All right, that's about what I had. I forget exactly what I said over on the OHIO, but it was something around 73-68. I think Ohio State gets this one.
Look at that.
I think Ohio State is going to do a good job of controlling the game, and I think that Texas A&M will try to get on a few runs here and there. I just don't think Texas A&M has the explosive firepower to be able to take down Ohio State's runs. And I don't think they have the firepower to maintain runs that they need to.
They are Phillip, fighting.
Is very confident.
Fighting those runs with just sheer brutality. So
they are. Phillip is very confident in the offenses in this one. He says 87-80. Hey, it could happen. If Ohio State gets to shooting, it could happen for sure. John's a little bit more conservative. He says OSU 70-62.
My mindset is if it gets to 87 points, like I feel like Ohio State beats them by 15. Like it's just not even.
Yeah, I could see.
How are they keeping up with
that? I could see a situation where Texas A&M does a really good job on the glass, second chance points and stuff like that, just because I think that they have done a good job of rebounding down there so far. But Ohio State has better rebounders this year than they had last year. So, you know, that could impact it as well. So we'll see. All right, Burke, let's get to our next game. Marquette and Maryland. Number 15, Marquette traveling to the Xfinity Center. Maryland has been looking good. What are they? They're 3-0 so far this season. Wins against Manhattan and Florida A&M, and who's that other one? Mount St. Mary's on the year. So Gillespie is leading the team in assists, 2.7. Julian Reese leading the team in rebounds, 8 per game, and Rodney Rice 16.7 points per game. For them, they'll be battling against Marquette, who has some really good players, I think. Their star player being Cam Jones, who's averaging over 20 points per game so far this season. Now, Marquette, they've not played anybody. Stony Brook, George Mason, Central Michigan, neither is Maryland, though. So it's going to be interesting in this one. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts are if Cam Jones was starting on Maryland, he'd probably average 40 points a game.
Yeah, probably.
Like it's
Kevin Willard would be like, take the ball, go.
He would absolutely thrive in there. You know, it's 1-on-3. It's time to cook offense that they let those point guards run. But yeah, he's currently averaging 22.7 points, 6.3 rebounds. He's doing everything for Marquette. But Maryland looks great. Maryland looks great. I want to give Maryland all the praise in the world. I just cannot give Maryland all the praise in the world. This, I feel like I've only ever started seasons by giving Maryland all the praise in the world. And then they've only ever let me down at like the tip of conference play. Or yeah, in that MTE event last year.
Yeah,
it's if Maryland wins this game, I will be shocked. I see, but that is just based on my past experience with Maryland, not this team. Like, Derrick Queen is a stud for them in the front court. I am interested to see over the course of the season as teams adjust to seeing Reese and Derrick play off one another, like what defenses will present to throw a wrench in that. I just feel like at some point that's going to get so congested when teams figure out how to deal with it. They're just going to pack that paint and it's just going to, I mean, I know it because I've experienced it for like the last two seasons.
Yeah. I mean, Derrick Queen, let's talk about him for a second. Derrick Queen has been really good this season. Now, I think he's taken one or two three-pointers. He hasn't hit them, so that's not really, you know, what he's going to bring you, but I don't think anybody really expected him to bring that so far this season. But he is scoring 13.7 points per game, so he's tied with Gillespie as the leading scorer on this team. He has started all three games for him and Reese out there together. I wasn't sure if they were going to start together and how that would go, but honestly, I've not disliked it, you know, like it's been good. I think that there's still some kinks to work out, but I mean, overall between those two guys right now, you're averaging six rebounds per game or offensive rebounds per game between the two of them. And between the two of them right now, quick math, what is that? Six, that's nearly 16 rebounds per game between the two of them. Like, and when you've been playing cupcakes and they have played what, 20 minutes at most per game together, it's been really good. So between the two of them, I really like what they've been able to do, how they've been able to play off of each other. Deshaun Harris-Smith, I will he ever turn into anything? I don't know. Averaging 5 points per game so far this season. I think whatever they're giving Derrick Queen, they need to give to Deshaun Harris-Smith, because Derrick Queen has come in and just thrived, and Deshaun Harris-Smith in his sophomore season is still like, what am I doing out here? He's only played 63 minutes so far this season, and he's not hit a three yet. Either he's not rebounding, he's not getting assists. Like, I mean, like, he has four defensive rebounds per game, I guess that's nice, but he's playing the three, but still, like, not getting any offensive rebounds. Like, I don't know, like, what does Deshaun Harris-Smith bring to this team, you know?
Yeah, it's we were in on him in that recruitment. It was between us and Maryland, and as far as last season,
you're glad
man,
you didn't get him. Like,
his shooting, he's had every opportunity to try to shoot himself through this, like more so than most people are given. And it's just been brutal to watch.
Yeah.
And then I was so focused on you had brought up Derrick Queen and Julian Reese working together and how you're like,
go back to him. That's fine. We don't have to crap on Deshaun Harris-Smith. Go back to the
defense. No, I mean, dude, it's not good. Like, that's, it's not good, period. Back to that. I have a lot of the same feeling about Michigan right now with their front court as I do with Maryland. Eventually, once teams figure out how to just pack the paint and congest it and they know what these guys are going to do, and this is coming from an Indiana fan, I understand how, you know, hypocritical this could sound. I feel like both the Michigan front court and these front courts are like they have redundant individuals on them. You have Derrick Queen and Julian Reese. I feel like Julian Reese is, he's built like a four with the skill of a five. That's when you have Derrick Queen, that dude's just doing the exact same thing, but to a lesser polished extent. Same with Danny Wolf and not even bringing up the Michigan game, but same with Danny Wolf and Vlad Golden. I feel like they're doing the same thing. One of them just does it way better than the other.
I think you're right. I think the other piece of this that I've kind of been wondering is, should Rodney Rice be starting? He's not even starting right now. He's not started all three games. He's tied as the leading scorer on this team, or no, not tied. I apologize. He is the leading scorer on this team. I think I said Gillespie and Queen was tied earlier. I apologize. But Rodney Rice is the leading scorer on this team, shooting over 40% from three, only one assist per game, and he's not really doing much rebounding for you. But he's also not turning the ball over. So, I mean, he's getting playing time, but he's not starting. And I don't know, like, I'm dealing with that a lot right now. Like, Rodney Rice brings you so much on the offensive end, and he doesn't turn the ball over. I feel like it's a good idea to have him starting, but I also feel like the team just plays better overall without him out there.
Start him, okay? Like, you have Jacoby Gillespie, and then the front court you do have. Like, what do you need out there other than somebody who can shoot the ball? You don't need anything. You don't need somebody going into the interior. Guess what? The interior is clogged as hell. We don't need anybody going in the interior. We need somebody who can shoot. Rodney Rice can shoot. I don't know why he's not starting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Miguel does bring you more on the defensive end, right, than Rodney Rice does. But, I mean, they're both the same size. Like, I don't know. Miguel, I don't know why. CV Analytics has him listed as a forward. But, I mean, they're the same size as Rice. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't hate it or dislike it either way, I guess. But it's just part of me that's like, the production's better with Rice in, but overall, like, Miguel, I don't think it's bad with him in. So I guess plus minus, let's look at that. Rodney Rice plus minus is 76. Miguel's plus minus is 50. So there you go. Plus minus wise, Rice should be starting.
Yep.
All right, what's your score prediction on this game?
Ooh, probably lower. I'll go 64-72 Marquette.
64-72 Marquette. I think it's going to be a little bit higher scoring than that. I think Marquette, Cam Jones is going to get his. I think that they're going to get out and run a little bit more. Marquette has averaged over 20, or both teams have averaged over 20 fast break points per game in this one. So I like what they're bringing there. I don't know how Maryland gets out and runs on this better Marquette team. And I think that's going to be a problem for them. I think that they're going to have to play a slower pace than what they've been playing. And I think they're probably going to turn the ball over a little bit more than they have been against this Marquette defense. So I'm going to go with Marquette in this one. I think that Marquette wins this one. I'll go with, I'm not looking at the chat yet. I don't want to copy Philip and John. I will go with probably 60. No, let's go 72-61. Marquette wins.
Dude, that the Jordan Geronimo thing is breaking my heart. Like, they.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about him.
Keep giving him the minutes. And he has so much inherent athleticism. I feel bad for Maryland fans watching it because I know how frustrating it is to watch it and just be like, man, if it just clicks,
yeah,
he is an elite athlete in this conference if it just clicks. But it just hasn't, and it still hasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you expect? He's at Maryland. He's got Kenny Moore as a coach. All right, there you go, Philip. I insulted Kevin Muller for you, so I know you're happy about that. John agrees. He says fast break points are now called Facebook points from now on. So glad you enjoyed me reading that wrong, John. All right, everybody, we're going to hit a break really fast, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Arizona, Wisconsin. Stay with us.
CVB Analytics isn't just another stat site. It's your ultimate destination for in-depth college basketball analysis used by fans and even the coaches. It has comprehensive stats for men's and women's basketball across Division 1 through 3, dating all the way back to 2018. From shooting percentage to game recap, CVB Analytics has it all. Try CVB Analytics for free or pay for a tier to take your basketball knowledge to the next level.
Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we do want to ask for you to like and subscribe. We would definitely appreciate that if you'd be willing to do so. I don't know why you wouldn't. It's free and it helps you out. So, oh, and also go subscribe over to our basketball channel. If you like game recaps and stuff like that, I'm going to be doing a lot of those solo. So you can go over and catch those on the basketball channel. It's just the Big Ten Huddle - basketball. Got the court background and everything. You'll see it over there. So, all right, let's talk some Arizona and Wisconsin. Burke, Wisconsin, and kind of an interesting team this season. They were like super three-point heavy, and then they struggled a little bit with that, and they didn't go so much three-point heavy. Now they're facing a really good Arizona team where it's like, I believe in Stephen Crowell. I think Stephen Crowell's a good big man, but I don't know if I believe in anybody else on this Wisconsin roster to play well against Arizona. I watched a video before we came on here where the guys, like, there were three guys on the show and all three of them picked Wisconsin. I'm not trying to be disrespectful toward Wisconsin, but I don't understand how you pick Wisconsin in this one. I know it's at home. I know the Kohl's Center is crazy, but I don't know. Do you feel the same way, Burke? What are your thoughts?
Dude, I think you pick Wisconsin in this one. I think you pick Wisconsin. Yes, dude. I love Wisconsin in this game. I'm always down. I'm the ever down on Wisconsin guy. They only ever beat us in the Kohl's Center, and you know I'm going to fear the Kohl's Center. But it's, dude, Wisconsin has made the shift. Like, credit to Greg Gard. He has gotten that program to make the shift to the modern game. He's dragged. Like, no, there isn't a program that had to be harder to drag into the modern game than that Wisconsin program of old. Like, it's insane what he's doing. And Tyler Wall, he was great for him last year. But Xavier Amos, like, the what he brings to that four position, spreading the floor, the ball movement is so much, it just looks better. It looks better. And as far as John Tonjes, he sufficiently subsidized what AJ Store brings. He's just able to score at each level, gets to the line.
He's been much better than I thought he would be.
He's 16 for 17 at the line. He gets to the line. I look at that free throw, and the entire Wisconsin free throw, they're getting to the line. They're shooting at a 92%. I just look at that with so much jealousy. I'm just like, Hoosiers, can we figure out how Greg Gard practices free throws with his guys? Let's do the same thing. Max Klesmet, like, he is going to be the singular transcendent figure in more than a few of their wins this year, like, just because he is liable to have a streak of shots that just end a game. And then as with the Arizona stuff, I'm just like, you know, is Caleb Love going to be Caleb Love, where he's going to show up and act like he's the baddest man on the floor and he knows it, only to look foolish and, you know, for doing so, just throwing efficiency out the window? Or is he, like, going to be playing like the baddest man on the floor, period? Which he's liable to be either of those things. Flip the coin.
Yeah, I think that this one's going to be really interesting to see if Wisconsin can get the get the pressure on Arizona that they need to get in order to really put Arizona in a bad situation. I mean, Caleb Love, obviously everybody knows about Caleb Love. He's been in college for what seems like 50 years now, but then again, it kind of seems like everybody's been in college for 50 years. But it's going to play out a lot to me with who wins the pace game, right? Wisconsin against bad teams has slowed the pace down quite a bit. They've not tried to go super fast, and Arizona is the complete opposite, where Arizona has the athletes, they have the height, they have the ability to go fast, and they do try to go fast as much as they can. Arizona pounds the paint. They go after scoring as many paint points as they can. It seems like over 50% of their shots overall in the season are inside the paint, and they've scored 53 points in the paint this year. Wisconsin, under 43% of their shots have been in the paint, and they have only scored 35 points in the paint per game this year. So for me, like, if I'm Wisconsin, I appreciate what Greg Gard is doing, trying to change kind of the identity of Wisconsin and make it a more modernized, efficient offense and what they do. I don't know if it changes that quick. And I also don't think that Wisconsin has the interior defenders to take care of Arizona trying to go down in the paint. Crowell and Winters, neither is really a, you know, defensive anchor or anything like that. And as much as Max Klesmet and John Tonji are good offensive players, I don't know if either of them can guard Caleb Love. I mean, is there anybody on this team you think can guard Caleb Love? Obviously, if Caleb Love's had a bad game, anybody can. But if he's on his game, I don't think there's anybody that can.
That's why, that's why I do kind of like Wisconsin in this. It's at the Kohl's Center. If you're going to flip a coin, I would – the Kohl's Center part of it makes me affect which way the wind is blowing on that coin flip.
So would you say you're – like, if you were like ranking your reasons why you think Wisconsin will win, is your number one reason the Kohl Center?
No, it's because they're just their 3-point shooting, like the way they're spreading the ball, all because really, okay, like they are. And you say like Arizona's looking to speed it up. This Wisconsin team, since they've lost Tyler Wall, since they've got Xavier Amos on the floor, they are running more. They're looking to get out. They're looking to get shots quick. It kind of plays into both their hands. Like this is going to be a fast game. I'm convinced of that. Not because Wisconsin failed at slowing it down, but because Wisconsin would also like to play it fast.
Yeah. I mean, you do make a really good point with Arizona. They have not been a very good free throw shooting team. Caleb Love and these guys are scoring really well. They have four different players scoring in double figures right now. So there's a lot of points being scored, but overall, like the free throw percentage has not been great. Caleb Love hasn't even been to the line so far this season. Yeah. I don't know how he's not gotten to the line.
So he's just jacking it up. That's all he's doing.
Right. Townsend is shooting 25% from the line. Awaka is shooting 50%. Visar, I don't know how to pronounce that last name. He's shooting 57% so far this season. So there's not a whole lot of great.
If you start the season with five games shooting free throws like that, your season is going to be free throws like that. And like they need to cut that out right now if they don't want that to just avalanche.
Yeah, and Trey Townsend, I mean, he was a big time transfer.
Was he
the one from Wisconsin? Was he the one from Oakland?
Yeah.
He was a big time transfer, and he is scoring. He is scoring okay, but 25% from the line. Like overall, that's not going to get it done. I apologize, he's not scoring okay. 5.5 points per game. So he's struggling with making the transition right now.
He had 2 points in that debut. 22 minutes, 2 points. That's just a rough outing. For just who was. He was a very hyped transfer. So, I mean, I like Wisconsin in this. Can I give my score?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to say Wisconsin 89, Arizona 84.
Wow. You really think Wisconsin's going to get out and run and don't you?
I think that Arizona's going to set the pace, but Wisconsin will be more than equipped and okay with playing at that pace.
All right. What'd you say? 89 to what?
89-84.
84. Okay. At first, I thought you said 74. I was like, wow, that's a big point differential. All right. I don't think it's going to get into the 80s. I think that Arizona is going to try to get out and run, but I think that Wisconsin is going to use the fouls to their advantage. And I think that Arizona is probably going to struggle shooting the free throw, continue to do so. I think, Wisconsin, they would be willing to match the pace, but at the same time, I think that their offense is going through a little bit of a change right now, so there's a possibility of going run and gun, but I'm going to say it's still going to be upper pace. I don't think that Wisconsin's going to be slow. I would say 79-72, Arizona. I think Arizona's going to win this one.
All right.
And the Kohl Center is going to be a big factor, but Arizona just comes away late. But all respect to the Kohl Center. It's a great.
Yeah, all sound reasonable. Great. You know I got respect for the Kohl Center. Shoot.
Yeah, man. I remember last year when both Kent and I both thought it was named after Kohl's, like the clothing store.
Is it not? What is it?
No, it's not.
I thought it was. I don't know.
I thought it was too.
I don't know nothing, man.
We looked it up. It's not named after them, which is hilarious to me. So. All right, let's talk some Alabama and gotta get to score predictions from the guys here. Arizona 85-79, so Phillip agrees, gonna be scoring up there, and John agrees as well, but he thinks it's gonna be a bit more of a blowout, 85-70 Arizona. So you're on Wisconsin Island by yourself, Burke.
Hey, it's all right.
It just means you can come back and let us all know that you were right if Wisconsin.
Or no, dude, I was just thinking about this. I was like, oh, what are we like? I was like, this is about the time last year where I was on this show and I said, if I had one player I could build a backcourt around right now in the Big Ten, it would be Doug McDaniel. I'm just like, it's so crazy how we can overreact to these games because that's definitely what I said at this point in the season. Listen, so.
in the non-conference, I was declaring Chucky Hepburn as the top 5-point guard in the in the Big Ten. So,
but no overreactions here. No overreactions here.
We've all had our takes. So
hey, man, in lot like he was so hot, and I was like, he's so small, the NBA doesn't even want to sniff him. That's the kind of college guy you want to build around. And I was like, yep. Jesus,
build around him. All right, well, a team that has built around some of their players is Purdue. They've built around Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer and TKR, and Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, and TKR have been good this season, but I do question what they're going to do with that five spot. Theo Jacobson, thoughts and prayers. Hope he's okay. He's not – nothing's wrong. I mean, he's just injured. He's out for the season. So I realize saying thoughts and prayers can make that sound worse than that. But still, I hope he's okay. I hope everything goes well with his recovery. But let's be honest. Wahlberg is not the answer. Right, Burke?
No. And no. And Purdue, that's don't come after me for saying that. You can't say that. Like, he is at this point the – he. I don't want them to come after me for saying that because he is the third answer. Like, you've already lost the first two answers that were the original answer. This, you can't just say he's the answer as the third fallback answer.
I mean, I think your answer is for Braden Smith to go nuclear. Like, I think that's your only answer.
No, yeah, that's
– just forget the five. Yeah.
Well, I think –
Braden Smith – as much as people wanted to not give Braden Smith his, his congrats and stuff for a great season last year, wanted to say, oh, it was all Zach Edey. He's flipping that all on other people's heads right now because he's had a very good season. 15 points per game, 9.3 assists per game. He's averaging 6 rebounds per game, 3 steals per game. Like we'll talk about Fletcher Lawyer and TKR in a second, but like, Braden Smith, give me Braden Smith and Mark Sears. This is going to be one hell of a matchup. I am super excited to see these guys duel.
Well, we saw it, man. We saw it before, and it was a duel. Like, it was a duel. And, Braden is a psychopath. He just is a psychopath. And
he drives a Cybertruck. So, confirmed psychopath.
I hate how much he could dictate this game. So my main thought on this whole game, this whole matchup, is just everyone is banking on Alabama's efficiency, like climbing to the norm. Because like Alabama, they're going to dunk, they're going to shoot threes. They've been shooting threes at a lower clip than they are accustomed to. And they're just like, hey, it's going to find its norm. I'm sorry, it's not going to find its norm in Mackey. That is not the place where your shooting efficiency it finds its norm. You don't, water doesn't
we'll
find
get
its
right.
level
we'll
there.
Get right. It just like, we'll do it at Mackey.
Yeah. So it's absolutely insane. So right at the top before this discussion, I'm saying like I'm choosing Purdue in this. Like Alabama.
Okay.
This is the time that Purdue beats this Alabama team. Like 3 months from now, different story. But right now, I think Purdue, just with what Painter can do with whatever he's given right out of the gate, he has them solid, like out of the gate. There's just so much size with this Alabama team that is going to cause so many problems for the front court.
There is, but where's the offense? Like, Cliff Amoria is in his fourth year, and he still can't make a jumper. Like,
dude, it's Grant Nelson at the three, who's like 6'11". He can shoot. But again, it is that everyone's counting on their shot coming. Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have the weight to go down there and, like, bang in the paint, right? Which I guess you could argue, like
– I mean, who's going to be guarding him, though? Yeah, it's Cam Heidi on him? Who's on? No, actually, Cam Heidi would be on the four, right? The three would be guarding Grant Nelson.
Well, unless Berg is in there. I mean, if you have
That is the case, if they have to match up that way, Purdue's front court is going to be exhausted.
I mean, I think you have to go with first at the five. I know he's not played much this season, and I know that, like, he's not had a great season so far. I mean, he has shot 60% from the court, so it's not been that bad shooting wise, but he's only played 22 minutes so far. I think that's the biggest thing for Purdue in this one. I don't trust Alabama shooting, especially in Mackey. I don't trust for Nate Oates to start the season well. I mean, how many teams has Alabama lost to at the beginning of the season? We're like, wow, that's a good win for that team, and then it was like, okay, well, yeah, I guess it was, but you know, this is also kind of how Alabama starts season. So even though Purdue doesn't necessarily have an answer, like, I don't think Will Berg is going to be in there enough to stop Cliff Amoria. And, I mean, you do have Cam Heidi. You do have Miles Colvin, who have some more size. But, I don't know. That's the hard part. Like, Trey Kaufman, he's 6'9". Like, you can't put him at the five and expect a lot of production.
Yeah,
and like Phillip said, Purdue got out rebounded and outscored in the paint by Yale.
I was just going to bring that up. 11 offensive rebounds for Northern Kentucky compared to Purdue's 8. 11 offensive rebounds for Yale compared to Purdue's 5. If that's what they're giving up to them, it's going to be a struggle there in the front court. I don't know why. I just really think that the Mackey environment is going to give them such a buff that it would keep a close game and turn it. It would keep a close Alabama win in favor of Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, there are probably 10, maybe 15 arenas, and I might be generous there, that can win a game for a team in college basketball. Like a big game, they win it for you. And I think Mackey Arena is one of those places that can just win you the game. I think Kohl Center is up there as well. I think the Rack is up there. We're getting outside the Big Ten, we're talking about Duke, North Carolina, all those teams. But at the end of the day, like, I think if I was picking this game on a neutral floor, like if this game was played in Vegas or something like that, I'd go with Alabama by probably 5 or 6, you know. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they have Mackey, I'm with Phillip, where I don't know if it's going to be 1-point game, but I think it'll be close, and I think that Purdue will win. I think Braden's awesome. I think Fletcher Lawyer has played really big in the non-conference against big teams, or in big games against teams. I know he didn't do well in the national championship game, but I think the biggest key for me in this one is Trey Kaufman-Wren. Can Trey Kaufman-Wren continue to get rebounds, shoot well, score 15 points in this game, and can he play good defense and not foul out? Like, if I'm Nate Oates, I'm in there, and I'm like, Cliff Morier, just go attack Trey Kaufman-Wren.
Yeah, just get him in trouble, and then it's if anything happened to him personal foul wise, it's floodgates are open and it's a problem. But I just think if the Boilers can get the win, this will look like one gorgeous win by the end of the season, and I think it's theirs to take here. I kind of felt gross coming out of my mouth right there, but go ahead.
Well, let me ask this really fast. What do you think about the strategy of throwing Caleb first, Riley Bergeson, Will Berg, just like throwing them down low and be like, just foul Cliff Morgan. Like,
you can't shoot. Just hack a shack the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, is it a bad play? Like, you got three guys that are, I'm not trying to be rude, but like, they're kind of indispensable. Like,
no, I'll tell you what. You're talking about that strategy. Like, that is Wisconsin's route to victory. But
but you can't do that with Crowell. Like, you need Crowell again. Okay. Anyway, what were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna say, I just wanted to say, hey, okay, yeah, we both picked Purdue to win, but let's talk hypotheticals. Okay, I want to know hypothetically if Bama were to beat Purdue by, let's say, 20 points in Mackey. Hypothetically, in this one, just hypothetically, and Minnesota beats Yale by 15. Where's the alarm set?
Oh, I think it's full panic mode.
It's.
I think if you're
West
Purdue,
Lafayette's on fire, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're Purdue, you're on the outside. You're like, everything's fine. You know, it's fine. Like, you're that dog in the meme, right? Where you're like, this is fine. on the outside, everything is on fire around you because you're like, how did Yale just get killed by Minnesota? And we just got killed by Alabama. Like, this is a non-conference game. Alabama's not as good in the non-conference. Like, we should be able to take them down. And they just came into our house and destroyed us. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I think that is a chaos scenario. Again, but, I'm talking – it's all hypotheticals, but it is
– right.
It is not a mathematical impossibility.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, Purdue does have a stretch here, though, man. They got Alabama, Marquette, NC State a couple games later. And then Penn State, Maryland, then Texas A&M, Auburn, like, they're not helping. And Auburn right now is number one in KenPom.
Yeah. Auburn's storyline of the season is wild. I cannot believe they followed up that trip with just such a resounding tail whooping.
Yeah, they did. They killed it, man. All right, so did you give your score prediction?
My prediction, did I 87? Wait, let me go. 78, 70, 78-77. Braden with the 3-10 feet behind the line for the win. He's a psycho this season, dude. And you know what? Purdue needs him to
be. Can you imagine what would happen to Mackey?
Purdue needs him to have an irrational, divinely inspired arrogance about himself to just take over this season.
They need Braden Smith to be divine in this game. I like
divinely arrogant. That's how I describe Kurt Cignetti. He is divinely arrogant. It is inspired by something else, but man, it works. And Braden could use some of that because Purdue's going to need it. There is no point guard you'd want to lead your team other than him right now in the Big Ten. And best of luck against Bama. I want them to do well. I love when Indiana and Purdue rivalry games matter. That to matter, we both have to be doing well. So,
yeah, that's cool. I'm going to pick Purdue as well. Like I said, I think that this game will sneak into the 80s, and I think that Purdue will win this one 81-77. I think Purdue makes the free throws down the stretch, and Braden Smith is a psychopath, and I think that he yells at the players while they're walking off the court, and the crowd just goes insane, and it's one of those moments where you just keep watching the game afterward, and they just zoom out on the entire, like, they don't storm the court, because Purdue won't do that against Alabama, I don't think. But you just see the crowd going crazy, and you see a Braden Smith in the middle of the floor. I believe in Braden, dude. I told people at the beginning of the year, I was like, do not disrespect Braden. Like, I know Zach Edey is the excuse. Like, oh, he just throws assists to Zach Edey, all this stuff. Yeah, yeah. He is such a good passer, dude. Like, he's a menace.
I didn't say he was going to be bad at it. I said it was going to go down because it couldn't not go down based on who his teammates were last year.
Well, yeah, his assists would go.
That's what I'm saying.
Average 9 assists per game for the entire season, but yeah. John is updating us. He says random basketball score message: Missouri's beating Mississippi fast.
Hey, shout out, Tony!
Holy crap!
Good work, Tony. How many did Tony have? Anybody got the box?
Oh, my gosh. I can look up the box really fast. That is insane.
Is Tamar Bates still on that team?
Burke, talk for a minute. My headphones are messing up.
No, is Tamar Bates still on that team? I don't even know. Yeah. Yep. Tamar Bates, still a member of the Missouri Tigers. Pretty incredible to see that he's am I still talking? Okay. Oh shoot. Can you hear me?
I was muted.
Wait, there we go. Okay.
Yeah, I was muted. Sorry. That is insane. Missouri is killing them that much. What's that coach's name? I forget. He was from Cleveland.
Sorry, I just clicked in when you said, what's that coach's name? He was from Cleveland.
Yeah, the Missouri coach. What's his name again? He's from Cleveland.
Drawing a blank. Dang it. It's
I can't remember it right now either. Somebody in the chat. John or Philip is going to look it up and let us know.
Dennis Gates.
Oh, that's right, Gates. I really like Dennis Gates. It's one of the few things about the SEC that I like is Dennis Gates. All right. Other teams, really fast. We talked about Washington. Any other teams, games that happened you want to discuss or games that are coming up? I think Michigan is interesting against TCU. They fell to Wake Forest. TCU right now is 3-0, and I think that Michigan is going to try to bounce back. I don't know. Did you catch that Wake Forest game? What do you think of Michigan?
I mean, a lot of my take on Maryland was inspired by some of that Michigan game, just redundant front court play. But other than that, I mean, the surrounding pieces around that front court, I do like what he's doing with them. They offensively, they look pretty sound. But again, this time last year, I was saying the same thing about last place Michigan. I was like, dang, their offense looks good. But it is a new man at the wheel, so I can't. That's unfair to do this year.
Well, I think I saw that one, and
Like, I'm not Mr. like I told you so type of guy. I try not to be that way. I know people do it, and that's fine. But like, Michigan just couldn't rebound.
Yeah.
Wake Forest had 11 offensive rebounds in this game, and they had a good amount of second chance points that got them in good position. They only had 8 second chance points, but the way they were able to keep getting rebounds and 38 points in the paint. So I don't know. Like, I don't know where you go from here if you're Michigan. You started off the game well. You had a 10-0 run at one point, which put you up, and then Wake Forest just kept going on runs after that. Wake Forest had a 9-0 run, then a 10-0 run, and then later in the second half, they had another 10-0 run, and Michigan could just never score in the paint. Like, I don't know how you're going to beat teams like Wake Forest. I don't know how you're going to win games in the Big Ten if you can't score in the paint, which is maddening because Vlad Golden is supposed to be really good and Danny Wolf is supposed to be really good. But if you can't score in the paint, like, I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah, if you're running a two-center setup, like, and you aren't scoring in the paint, what is the point of anything?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, neither of them had fantastic games in this one. Like, Roddy Gale was your leading scorer with 11 points. Yeah. Vlad had 8. Danny Wolf had 4. Like, if I'm a Michigan fan, I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's
you brought in 2 7-footers for 12 points against Wake Forest?
Yeah.
So, and I mean, you know, like, they weren't bad shooting either. Like, Sam Walters was 3 for 5. I mean, Reuben Jones, I guess, was 2 for 6, but still, like, 33% is not bad. It's, you know, you'd like to be better than that. And then Numari Burnett, I don't know why Numari Burnett is playing so much. I would give it to Sam Walters or Will Cheddar. I'd put either one of them in.
I feel like the ceiling that they want to get is higher with Numari. Like, if something develops there, like, yeah.
He's a senior. Like, if he hasn't turned into it yet, he's not going to. Like, Sam Walters is a sophomore. Like, and I get he's bigger, so then, like, you have a whole lot more size on the floor, but I don't know.
Hey, how do you feel about the prospect of potentially getting to see Ace Bailey play?
Oh, dude, I'm super excited to see Ace Bailey. Is he supposed to be coming back against
I don't know. Monmouth? I don't know. I probably just do way too much conjecture in my own head because I
hope he does come back, man. I think that defense, like I predicted in the offseason, that defense was going to run so much on Ace Bailey and what he was able to do athletically. I didn't think it was like only going to be him. I think they have other players who are athletic and can play defense as well. But man, when I saw Ace Bailey in the paint and run out on a shooter and nearly block it.
Yeah.
Like as he was in the paint, crazy. I was like, this dude's a freak. Like I knew he was a freak, but then I saw it and I was like, yeah, this dude's really a freak.
Yeah.
So, and Dylan Harper's been legit. So
yeah,
you put Ace Bailey in there, combo him with it. Like it's game over, dude. What do you think? Are you excited to see him play?
Oh yeah, man. I just, it's the unspecified injury. What is it?
I don't know.
See, and it is that with the timing just makes me, that's what I'm saying when I'm just like, something goes off in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the real answer here is you can never take Dylan Harper off the floor.
No. Yeah.
Your team is automatically like just losing points. If Dylan Harper is off the floor, some of their worst lineups don't have Dylan Harper on the floor. So at this point, you can't do anything without him. All right. Any other? Here we go. The OHIO podcast coming off their call-in show. Appreciate you being here, Eric. Says, hey, guys, hit the like button. Yep. We're about to get off here soon, but we appreciate you coming in, Eric. We talked about the Buckeyes earlier if you want to rewind and hear our predictions on that one.
Hey, we're high on them.
Yeah, we are. That we are.
I'm high on the Big Ten. Again, I want to take a little victory lap. Dude, well done, every team. Like, I mean, compared, not maybe not Washington, like some other missteps, but
Northwestern did lose to Dayton.
Hey, that is not as bad as Big East Villanova losses.
It's kind of like New Mexico to me, right? Yep. Like Dayton, good made major. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think well done. Everybody has been only crapping on this conference since the since the final whistle of that national championship. And yeah, good to see that we handled business in this opening week.
Did you see what Joe Lunardi said about the Big Ten?
No.
And Phillip's not letting us forget Minnesota lost to North Texas. Yep. Breaking my heart there, Phillip. Breaking my heart. No, Joe Lunardi wrote an article and he was like, Big Ten or conference supremacy. And the entire part of his article was like, the Big Ten sucks. And
yeah, well, of course.
He's saying like, yeah.
Dude, like, so lazy. Lunardi, lazy writing, sir.
Yeah.
Be better. He's,
he's not.
Speaking great. Of what other people said, Nate Oates, man. Nate Oates. With that Mackey Arena comment. How asinine can you be? That dude is crazy.
I remember. What exactly did he say, though? I forgot.
He said, now, hey, you can't. It was something along the lines of, you know, hey, credit to Purdue. They sell out games. It isn't just because we're in town that this is like a big deal. And I'm like, dude, what?
If there's a fan base you don't want to poke, Nate Oates, that's the one you don't want to poke.
Just as the rival, I'm like, dude, okay, we're in a different league of animosity than Alabama basketball fans. I we're in a different league of fervor. I have a feeling just because they were all football fans. I'm slowly becoming a football fan. It's
there you
been
go.
Really fun.
Cincinnati turns you into it.
But yeah, it's just.
Phillip wants to talk about another coach who has his team undefeated. Chris Holtman and DePaul is undefeated. I think they've matched their win total from last year.
CJ Gunn, how is he doing on the team this year? I haven't checked in on him.
Honestly, I haven't watched all that much DePaul. I probably should.
13 points a game right now.
Wow.
CJ Gunn's dropping 13 points a game, 60% from the floor. Good Lord. Well done.
Man. Jacob Myers.
Yeah, I liked him too. It just didn't work out.
I mean, this is what Chris Holtman does, though, right? Like Chris Holtman, he gets his players to play well in November and December, and then conference play comes around in January. Like, I don't know. Wake me up if DePaul is better than like 2-6 in January.
Dude, you broke up with him, okay? He can do okay. You need to get over it.
Listen,
you guys broke up with him. Now that he's happy, you need to let it go.
He did so much damage to me. I was out here doubting Jake Diebler. All right. Listen, that's how much damage he did to me. I had everybody on the podcast in the preview believing in Jake Diebler, but me, the Ohio State fan, wasn't believing in him.
I'm going
to
say
how much damage Chris Holtman did to me.
I'm going to say at this point in the season where the same point in the season last year, I had said Doug McDaniel is the player I want to build a team around. I am saying Diebler's a good coach.
Well, I just hope that take
that
doesn't
is truly
age.
How I feel right now.
I just hope that take doesn't age the same way as your McDaniel. If Jake Diebler gets suspended from away games, I blame you.
Age is like the most rotten milk.
John says, shout out to Caleb Banks at Tulane.
See, I need to do a quick little refresh on what everybody's up to that's
let's
left.
Let's check in on Caleb Banks.
Is Peyton Sparks averaging like 40 points for Ball State this year?
He transferred back to Ball State.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, dude, he was MAC Player of the Year. He was.
I know. It was so weird.
He doesn't translate for some dudes. It's so weird.
Eric says, show us something dull where Holtman hurts you. Right here, Eric. My heart. It hurts so bad. I still think that there's going to be an offense where the ball just stays stagnant at the top of the key and somebody shoots a three out of desperation.
He can't get you anymore, dude. He's in Illinois now.
Judy Mobley gets the ball at the top of the key, five steps back from the three-point line, and then he shoots it, and I'm like, wow, this is way better. John said he stinks at Ball State.
I always pull for him. That dude, I hope he never has to pay for another beer in Indiana as long as he lives. He shouldn't have to.
It pulls him up as – that's weird. CB Analytics pulls him up as Indiana or Ball State. It should just be one. Oh, yeah. Oh, yucks. Yuck. Yeah. That things are not good for Peyton Sparks right now.
A lot of season left.
Yeah. 0 points in the paint so far. Two field goals per game. Yikes. Yikes. Philip says, will Diebler and Ohio State get enough Sunday afternoon games on CBS? As long as they don't play at noon. Because the Ohio State fans are very upset with noon football games right now.
Yeah, it's the noon basketball game is the worst. I hate it.
Yeah.
IU has, I think it's the noon tip this Sunday, and it's just the worst.
Yeah. I like the noon or the afternoon CBS. Nice little 1:30, 2 o'clock.
I like turning off the 1 o'clock football games and watching some Sunday basketball.
Eric says, LOL, no, there'll be noon on Fox. Yeah, they're going to create a big noon tip-off.
There you go. Big noon tip-off.
They're like, actually, this is going so well in football. Let's create big noon tip-off on Sundays. Oh, boy. All right, Burke. I better get off here. I got a couple videos to make for the football channel before I I did want to tell everybody. I'll say this for the Power Ranking show, too. A lot of what we were doing there for a while was repurposed content, and I've just come to notice that, you know, I don't think it's as quality. So for at least the time being, we're going to try to do a whole lot more like individualized videos that are different from what you see on the live show. So if you want to catch the live shows, that's going to basically be what it is a live show. We're not going to repurpose content unless it's just a really important subject I feel like needs to be touched on. We probably won't repurpose content very often. Like I have two videos I plan on doing tonight for the football channel, and I'll post both of those tomorrow. But I'm not going to cut this one up. I'm just going to be doing mostly game recaps and game previews, as like individual videos on the basketball channel. So Burke, where can people find you, man?
You can find me everywhere across all socials at Often Daunted. The name Often Daunted, I like to explain because, you know, Never Daunted has become the Indiana football rallying cry. Started the name Often Daunted.
Calling
because,
people daunted has been the other cry of it.
Yeah, like, also.
So many pictures of calling SEC fans daunted. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. SEC is the single most daunted conference there is. Yeah. But, yeah.
Southeastern daunted is what they should call it. The SED.
I started the show 3 years ago with the name Often Daunted. Just more so now, it's not so much a statement on the program as it is me, my luck and circumstances at any given time. Often Daunted, I just wanted to stick with it. No, I'm not changing it. I started it 3 years ago before our football team got good. So
well, the if you remember Big Banter, boy, those were the days. The football podcast for them was named LEO, Love Each Other.
Which was
Tom Allen's cry.
Shout out, that's the Hoosier Happy Hour guys. I do love that show. They really changed it up because we had to change it up once we fired Tom Allen. You can't really call the show LEO anymore, as that was his rallying cry. So
for sure. Yep. Happy Hoosier Happy Hour is a great show. And then Hoosier Huddle is the one with the College Huddle. They do a great job over there, too. Like the Hoosier Huddle guys a lot as well. And they have a good website with a lot of writing too. So
they're great. They're great, but I just used all my time here to plug them, and I'm going to go back to plugging myself. You can find me on YouTube. Just started up the show Often Daunted now on video, but I do have 110 episodes now on audio, wherever available. Just recapping Indiana weekly. Now I moved to a weekly format because I'm a dad of three girls. They're getting older, more demanding. And I want to be a good husband. Don't want to be such a bum. And just devote all of it to this quality over quantity this year. Please follow me everywhere at Often Daunted. Thank you so much for having me on, JR. Again, I just have so much fun on this Thursday night. Love, this is like the start of my weekend. I just get my mind right, head to bed, start the weekend right, watch Indiana kick some butt on Saturdays. That's what I do.
Let's do it. You won't miss a Saturday of Indiana kicking butt. You've had it so long in football, and the bye week, well, now you get it in basketball. So there you go.
Yep. I just don't know when I'm going to lose again, man.
And with that, we will end the episode. Thank you so much, everybody, for watching.
Said Often Daunted.
Big Ten Huddle. Never Daunted is the Often Daunted podcast. Thank you so much, everybody. We appreciate it.
Have a good one.